Before we proceed,
get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon on this, what is this, a Tuesday afternoon. Heading toward, we're not even midweek yet. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Of course, we invite you to call the show, as always, at 866-546-5254. Here we are on the Head On Radio Network, and we hope you'll enjoy the program. Stay with us the whole 2 hours today. My. So many things taking place in the news today, yesterday, really. And before I go any further, how many of you saw Melanie Morgan, a witch named Melanie Morgan, last night on Hardball, just debating Al Sharpton? What did you think of that gal? God, she scared me. Her mouth did contortions I didn't know people could do. And then Peter King was on with Katrina Vanderhoevel from Nations Magazine. Of course, she made mincemeat of him like she always does to anybody who opposes her in a debate. By the way, we're going to have Katrina on. I think it's next Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. Tuesday's the 4th. She's going to be on the 5th. And of course, we had the Senate hearings yesterday. Congratulations to Representative Walter Jones, a Republican of North Carolina, the only Republican with guts enough to want to find out what actually happened. And what else was in the news? Oh, yeah. I almost forgot one little item that kind of, if you'll pardon a pun, popped up during the evening last evening. We heard that Rush Limbaugh was detained at the airport coming in on a private jet from the Dominican Republic. Now, I haven't had time to research all of this yesterday. Did he have a show on yesterday? And if he did he fly to the Dominican Republic last night? I don't know whether he had a live show on yesterday or not. I never heard. But he did fly back from the Dominican Republic on a private jet. And, well, what do you know? He had a prescription on him that wasn't in his name. And we find out it's Viagra. That's what we find out so far. That's what we know so far. And although his lawyers say that he was briefly questioned and left, from what I can find out, he was detained over there. at Fort Lauderdale, I believe it was, for about 3.5 hours, is what I hear. I went to the trouble of calling a couple of pharmacists, one from a big drug, two big drug chains here in Southwest Florida. They're all, mostly all over the country. And asked them about the legalities of having prescriptions that are not in your name. And they both told me that, both told me that it is absolutely illegal in Florida for a doctor to make out a prescription for himself, sign it out to himself, that's for a patient. Both of them said it's absolutely illegal to do that here in Florida. They weren't sure whether it was a misdemeanor, a felony, or whatever, but it is against the law in Florida for a doctor to prescribe something for a patient. Actually, he's prescribing it for himself and then giving it to Limbaugh is what the case is. I guess Limbaugh's name wasn't on the bottle of pills that he had. The question becomes then, was Mr. OxyContin breaking the law? It's obvious that he probably was, and if he did, what are the consequences as a result of this non-guilty plea, whatever, if you've heard that twisted explanation of his about how he was guilty but didn't plead guilty, and did everything but stand on his head to say he didn't plead guilty, but actually he did plead guilty to the doctor shopping charge, and he's got to remain clean, I think, for 18 months and take tests and all that. But Rush, what were you doing in the Dominican Republic? Now, it's none of my business, of course. And Johnny O writes and lets us know he was detained at the Palm Beach International Airport. Well, excuse me, yes, right, he wouldn't be landing at any commoner's airport at Fort Lauderdale. Of course he would be landing at Palm Beach. What was I thinking? Rush wouldn't want to be amongst the regular knaves, the peons, you know, those kind of people. He wouldn't want to have to. But here he is getting off this plane. And first of all, why did they target him? Did they know? Did someone tip him off? Or do they do that to everybody when they come back into this country? But one of the big questions I have is, Rush, what were you doing in the Dominican Republic? Not known as a mecca for golfers. We know you like to play golf, despite the horrible pain you have in your back, of course, that you had to take that OxyContin for. Rush, you know what the Dominican Republic is known for, don't you, Rush? I'm sure you do. And I want to make sure everybody else knows. It's known as one of these places where the sex trade is everywhere. They got the rent-by-the-hour love motels. Yeah, it's famous. People take these little jaunts over to the Dominican Republic, just like they do over in the Orient in some places. Where is it? To Bangkok, Thailand, where lots of people fly in there for the sex trade. They do the same thing at the Dominican Republic. I can't see another reason to even go there, can you? But it just seems odd to me, don't you think, that Rush Limbaugh, a man of wealth and privilege, and so well-known and so well-respected within the Republican Party, goes to this place where pimps run free. They absolutely run free in the streets, and no one says anything, and they're selling sex on every street corner. And Rushy Boy comes back with a bottle of Viagra in his case that's not even his? Oh, my. Oh, my. I don't know. And you know what they say. That's a recipe for disaster. If you mix OxyContin and Viagra, you end up with somebody like is an insensitive prick, and you wouldn't want that. You know, there's a million jokes going around today. Somebody sent me an email, said maybe those pills weren't his, maybe they were his lover's pills, and we know what he's referring to there. And a lot of people wrote in and said they thought they hoped he would get a stiff sentence. And one very clever, enterprising person wrote in and said, well, perhaps the House Majority Leader was with him, and they weren't Rush's pills at all. They were John Boehner's pills. So, Rush, what were you doing? What were you doing? It seems he can't get a legal prescription for anything nowadays. Nothing at all. 3.5 hours at the Palm Beach International Airport. What does it say? I was looking down his bio here. He's 55 years old, and the Immigration and Customs and Enforcement people, they checked it out, checked out his luggage, and that's what they found. And my goodness, Rush, I don't know. I don't care what he does in his private life. I really don't. But one must remember that this man is a god in the Republican Party, you see. Now, today, they will refer to him as a comedian. That's what they'll say today. When they don't want to have anything to do with what he says, they refer to him as a comedian. But he is an unmarried Christian man. Like I said, a god in the Republican Party. And, of course, being an unmarried Christian man in the Republican Party, he should not be having sex until he's married. So I just have to wonder about all this. Perhaps they really weren't his pills, because surely Rush wouldn't be doing anything. No. I decided to have some fun with this, and I thought I would invite Rush onto the show today. I like to call him or O'Reilly or Borch or one of these people about once a month and invite him on the show, and I always get the same answer, as you might well imagine. But would love to have had Rush on the program today so he could defend himself against these charges that everybody's making, and perhaps answer some of these jokes that are going around about him. And I hate to see that, you know, joking about Rush Limbaugh. He's an icon in this business, you know. And so what if he was over buying a little bit of sex over in the Dominican Republic? So what? And had the body. Jesus, can you imagine anything more embarrassing than this? Can you? And yet he'll come on your show. I don't know. Did anybody? Somebody let me know. Give me an email. Shoot me something on the chat room. Did he have a live program today? I would like to know if he had a live program on today. I really don't know the answer to that. Wish I did. Trying to see what else we got on the agenda here today. Not a whole lot. Do want to let you know we got David Rose on the program today. He's going to be coming up in about 15, 20 minutes. He's going to be talking about his book about Guantanamo. He's written for Vanity Fair. He has had a lot of articles published, and he's got a new book out about Guantanamo. He's been to Guantanamo several times as recently as this month, and it's going to be an interesting chat with David Rose, so it'd be good to hear from him as well. Still haven't had anybody let me know whether or not Rush had a live show today or not. I would like to know that. If you know, be sure and shoot us an email or whatever, and we'll find out. Maybe let's go to the phones. Maybe whoever's on the phone here has got the answer to that question. We'll just see. Oh, that phone's blinking away. Here we go. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Ben Birch here.
Hi, Ben.
Well, you know, it's not just sex tourism that the Dominican Republic is known for.
Oh.
You know, one of my activisms is sex workers' rights activism, because I think that sex workers are pretty much abused no matter where you find them in the world, and that's not a good thing.
Oh, so maybe Rush was. What are you saying? Rush was over there trying to help those folks out.
Well, you know, he might have been helping them out just a little bit, except for the fact that most of the sex trade in the Dominican Republic is children under the age of 18. 40% of those sex workers are male, and 60% of them are little girls.
Hmm. Now that is interesting.
So if he was over there on a sex tourism trip,
if he was,
not going to allege.
No, of course not.
Speculating here.
Yes.
Then the question comes: how old was whatever action it was he drummed up, if he did?
Yeah, that would be the more interesting question as to whether or not he had a prescription or whatnot here on this coast. It'd be the story's at the other end, isn't it? It's back in the real story's back in the Dominican Republic.
Agreed. And The other thing is, you know, the other thing you can get in the Dominican Republic, the other reason one might go there, is almost a scandalous. You can, at least for Rush, you can buy as many Cuban cigars there as you like.
Oh, Ben, surely you're not suggesting that Mr. Limbaugh would bring illegal Cuban cigars into this country on a private airplane. I hope that's not what you're alleging. I really do.
Oh no, I wouldn't even dream of suggesting that the Cuban cigars he always smoked got into the country illegally.
No. Interesting. We've got to find a contact or in the Dominican Republic right away. I don't have any contacts there. I'm going to have to find one. I think there's
I really think that perhaps our good friends at the National Enquirer are probably on this one already.
I hope so, and they're right over in that neighborhood, aren't they? In Palm Beach or
they sure are.
Fort Lauderdale, one of that. Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
You know, Ben. Somebody sent me a little note today talking about the Viagra. It said when Republicans take Viagra, they simply get taller.
That's true. Yeah, it helps their posture. You take care now, sir.
Thank you, Ben. Thank
Bye.
You. Yeah, I love that when Republicans take Viagra, they simply get taller. That would be inferring that, okay. And I did see a bumper sticker. I copied this one down a couple of weeks ago. I did see a bumper sticker where somebody said, even on drugs, Rush is right. Now, can you imagine being that goofy to be wearing a bumper sticker around on your car on that? Oh, my. I would love to know the answer to that. But if any of you have any... If you have any contacts in the Dominican Republic, be sure and let us know. I would love to know, absolutely love to know what actually went on over there. And I think Ben's right. That it's the question. The big story is not whether or not he had a illegal prescription on him. The big story is what was Rush doing in the Dominican Republic. Oh, that brings up a terrible image. Oh, a terrible image. But if in some way that he was, if in some manner he was violating his probation or whatever it is they called it out of that mess that he was in, I hope he gets a nice stiff sentence at least. Hope that works out that way. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break and get our thoughts together here, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. So mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration when human respect is disintegrating. This whole crazy world is just too frustrating, and you tell me over and over. there is in Red China. Then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace and tell me.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the Decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice. The Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Ed Asner. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state government?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Now, come on, people, come on. If you could see my email this afternoon, come on, please. Please. Mr. Limbaugh has a right to privacy, doesn't he? He has a right to privacy. If he went over there to the Dominican Republic and had himself a good time, he probably was just, you know, going for the fine dining and the nightlife. That's probably all. I don't know why all of you people are so judgmental about this poor man running his private life through the gauntlet like this. I think it's terrible. And to insinuate that Mr. Limbaugh, a.k.a., what was his name? Jeff Christie? Yeah, Jeff Christie. That had a little bit of a reputation back in Pittsburgh for certain things. To insinuate that that's still the case, that he would actually go over there for, you know, underage people, be their boys or girls, either. That's terrible. That's a terrible thing to insinuate that. So I really hope that all of you try and be very responsible over this and make sure that anything you say about Mr. Limbaugh going to the Dominican Republic and possibly violating whatever kind of parole it is that he's on, it's all alleged. It's just all alleged, and you have to know that Rush you know, he went through this rehab and all that. He's probably turned the corner on all that now. He probably is no longer involved in any of that stuff, don't you think? I mean, if he does start laughing and stuttering hysterically on his show now and then and exhibits some of the symptoms of over-medicating on OxyContin and so forth, even though he does that now and then on his show, that doesn't mean that he's actually doing it. He said he's straight. He said he's clean. And he, you know, you have to admit, his lawyer last night, Mr. Black, who would never lie, you know Mr. Black would never lie about a thing like this. Mr. Black simply said that the doctor gave him that so he could, you know, have some privacy. So, please, I implore you, let's give Rush the benefit of the doubt here. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello.
Hello.
This is David Rose here.
Well, hi, David. How are you? We're a couple minutes early, but I just happened to be on. We're on live right now, and here your call came in. Glad to hear from you.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Thanks for being on the program today. You're in Jolly Old right now, are you not?
I'm in Oxford. Yeah, Oxford, England.
Okay, good. Are you a native of Oxford?
No, I was born and brought up in London, but. I've lived in Oxford for about 10 years. My wife is a professor at the university here.
Ah, okay. Well, we can certainly tell you're not from Brooklyn.
That would be right.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I promised, we were going to have David Rose on the program today and wants to talk about, well, he's got a new book out, Guantanamo, The War on Human Rights. And I doubt there's any journalist that knows any more about that horrible situation down there than does David Rose. David, as I understand it, you've made several trips to Guantanamo?
Well, I've actually only succeeded in getting into Guantanamo once. I've interviewed a number of detainees who've been released from Guantanamo, and I did try and go there just the week before last. I was due to fly there from Andrews Air Force Base on Sunday, 10th of June, 11th of June, and when I arrived in Washington the previous night, I was told that the flight and the military commission trial that I'd been due to cover had been cancelled because, of course, three detainees had taken their own lives. I then spent a very frustrating time. I succeeded on that Sunday in getting new clearance to go to Guantanamo, and with another British reporter, a colleague from the Daily Mail, we managed to make somewhat elaborate transport arrangements to get there. It involved flying to Kingston, Jamaica, and then hiring a private aircraft. But we were just about to board our plane the following day in Jamaica, having checked again with Guantanamo that we were good to go and that we'd be welcome there, when we were told that the Pentagon had just called and warned the private air charter company that if we got on that plane, they couldn't land at Guantanamo. And since they were planning on refueling when we got there, and it was a pretty small plane, we thought it probably wasn't a very good idea to set off.
So you actually are... absolutely landing on government property, U.S. government property, when you get there.
Well, you're really landing on a sort of strange little colony. It's a most peculiar place. There you are with communist Cuba on all sides, and there's this little enclave which has subdivisions just like you might find in Iowa or, California or upstate New York, and there's an elementary school and there's a high school and there's a military base, and then right in the middle of that is this concentration camp.
I'm afraid I don't know the answer to this question. Maybe you don't either. Maybe I shouldn't even ask it. Does the U.S. own that property, or is it on one of these lifetime lease things?
Well, it's a really weird thing. It goes back to the Spanish War of the 1890s. And with the treaty that concluded that war, in 1903, the U.S. signed an indefinite lease on Guantanamo Bay. Of course, the reason why the Bush administration originally chose Guantanamo as the site for this camp was that they had legal advice that because it wasn't sovereign U.S. territory, but leased, at least in theory, from Cuba, then U.S. constitutional law would not apply. And that's why, as one of the British Supreme Court, or law lords, we call them, commented, one of our Supreme Court justices said that Guantanamo was therefore a legal black hole because neither international nor American law applied there. But, yeah, it is a very anomalous situation. In theory, America is supposed to pay Fidel Castro a check of $4,198 per year, but he hasn't cashed these checks for quite a while.
Wow. You know, it's hard to imagine that clear back during the Spanish-American War that that our government had actually thought about that as being more or less immune from U.S. law there. What foresight they had that they'd want to use it. Gee.
Well, it's a very anomalous situation. Interestingly enough, before, as you know, a couple of years ago now, the Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, the U.S. Constitution did apply to Guantanamo detainees. And this week, probably on Friday, we're expecting the extremely important decision from the Supreme Court in the case of Hamdan. He is the guy who, he's originally a Yemeni who was said to be Osama bin Laden's personal chauffeur. And he is facing trial by military commission in Guantanamo. And he has challenged the constitutionality of the military commission tribunals down there, saying that they don't represent adequate standards of due process, and that, you know, all the various provisions of the U.S. Constitution that apply to criminal defendants have been broken by the way that these military commissions have been set up. Well, that's all because the fact that he can bring that action, the fact that the Supreme Court will be ruling on it on Friday, is basically down to the fact that some British and Kuwaiti detainees some time back now, 4 years ago, brought an action that was decided 2 years ago, which said that, yeah, the U.S. Constitution does apply there. But even before that, there were some very weird things. Like, there was a janitor who was actually a citizen of the Bahamas who was working at the school down there, and he was accused of, I think, selling drugs to children at the naval base school there. And he was charged in federal court. He was tried in Virginia. It seemed there was no objection to American law applying to him. And I believe there was another case where somebody was charged with some kind of sexual offense down there. And again, he was a citizen, not of America, but of Jamaica. But he was tried in Virginia. So, and the other thing, of course, is that they have these big lizards down there. These, they call them...
monitor lizards?
Know, dragons. If you accidentally hit one in your car, you can be fined $10,000.
Really? Oh. Yeah, what are they called? Kyoto dragons, or...?
That's the one, yeah.
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 Well, let me ask you, I know you're well-versed on the whole situation there, so this goes before the Supreme Court. Is this the Hamdan case that's gone in front of the...
that's right, yeah.
And so the petitioner loses, and he's on trial at a tribunal down there. What recourse does he have to try and find justice anywhere?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, if he loses, the Supreme Court will be saying that the rules that the administration has made up for these military commissions are constitutional. Now, these rules do not in any way resemble the kind of due process that you would get in any American court, federal or state, or indeed under the Uniform Code of Military Justice if you're a member of the military. The rules of evidence are much weaker. There's no kind of protections against unlawful search and seizure. There are no Miranda rights when you're being interrogated. All those protections that have grown up over many decades in the ordinary criminal justice system in the United States, which are very, very similar to the kind of protections you get in the United Kingdom, as a matter of fact, they don't apply in these Guantanamo tribunals. There's no jury. There's just appointed military officers who are there to try the case. And so if the Supreme Court says that's okay, they're saying, well, you know, the administration can make up the rules as it wants, and there's no comeback. In theory, if he was tried under a military commission and was then convicted, this is not yet exactly clear how it would work, but he might have some recourse to the D.C. Federal Appeals Court. But exactly how much power that would have, you know, it might be able to review a sentence, something like that. But in theory, what you would be saying, if the Supreme Court rules against Hamdan, probably on Friday, you would have the situation potentially created whereby people could be tried and sentenced to death in Gitmo, having not had anything remotely resembling the due process that you get in the United States. And in theory, of course, one of the most potent types of evidence that could be used against them in these trials are confessions that may well have been obtained under conditions that, well, would not remotely be acceptable in any American court, but in fact, worse than that, it would amount to torture.
Oh, my. And the Geneva Convention, we've laughed at the Geneva Convention. I think it was Gonzalez that said, I think he used the term quaint.
That's right.
About the Geneva Convention. Let me ask you, you actually got into the place down there once. How did you get permission to go there?
Well, if you want to go to Guantanamo, it's not too difficult as a reporter. Basically, they have regular tours, maybe one a month, sometimes two a month, and you join the line. You contact either the Pentagon or the Joint Task Force at Guantanamo. You talk to the public affairs people, and eventually your number comes up. And I think I had to wait a couple of months. This is about 2 years ago now. The thing is, when you get down there, you are totally chaperoned. You are not meant to see or hear anything new or surprising or that is in any way uncontrolled. Here's an astonishing fact. At Guantanamo itself, they have 14 full-time press officers. Now, there are 460 detainees, so it's a very high ratio of press officers to detainees. But there's also a large office in Southcom in Miami, which is entirely dedicated to the public relations of Guantanamo. And then in the Pentagon itself, in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, there's another huge office, which is entirely due to spinning Guantanamo, to trying to make the world see that Guantanamo is a benign, effective place where justice is done and where genuine bad guys, as opposed to, I think, many of the sort of unfortunates who have, in fact, been imprisoned, the genuine bad guys are imprisoned. Well, the fact that large parts of the world and now large parts of America don't believe this to be the case suggests that all these public affairs officers are actually not doing a fantastic job, or that perhaps they're just trying to sell something which is just not a sellable case. But anyhow, when you get down there, you get your tour. And I was actually quite lucky when I went down there, because most reporters only get 1 or 2 days. I had about four. And so, you get to meet a couple of hand-picked guards, and they tell you about their lives. You get to tour an empty cell block. You might see in one of the lower security parts of the camp some detainees playing volleyball and washing their clothes. And they may even try to talk to you, but you certainly can't reply, because one thing you have to do when you go there is sign a very rigid set of conditions, which if you break, you will be immediately kicked out of Guantanamo. And rule one is you don't at all talk to detainees. You can't ask them any questions. So it's a very controlled and limiting process. I mean, the fact is, there are some reporters who have doggedly covered Guantanamo and have, been there many, many times. I think particularly, for example, of Carol Rosenberg of the Miami Herald, who if Guantanamo has a chronicler, it's been Carol. And I take my hat off to her. She's done a fantastic job. And just by sheer dogged persistence, going on tour after tour after tour, has probably revealed more about what it's actually like down there and what's going on there than any other single journalist. But, it's very slow, uphill work. You find out a couple of little tiny facts in the course of a day, if you're lucky, and the rest is just spin.
I am totally confused about some of this. I saw one of the talk shows last week, and I can't remember which one it was, but there was a young man on there, perhaps between 25 and 30 years old. He was Muslim. He was a British citizen, and he had been in Gitmo, and they had released him back to the British government, and I think the British government just let him go. And the person on the show was saying, well, obviously there's some people in Guantanamo who are innocent, who were just picked up in a sweep of an area and are innocent. This guy said everybody in there is guilty. He said, well, what about the British citizen you let go? He said, well, he was guilty. Well, she said, if he was guilty, why did you let him go? I mean, if he was a menace, why, we turned him over to the British government and let them decide. He said, well, obviously the British government decided that he's harmless. So there's just a lot that goes on there that makes no sense.
What you have, is a propaganda line. The Pentagon has this phrase that they, we've seen leaked in the media time and again now, talking points. They have a set of Guantanamo talking points. And one of their talking points is that everybody in Guantanamo Bay was, the phrase is, picked up on the battlefield. Well, I'm afraid it's just nonsense. I'm not sure if there was anybody at Guantanamo Bay who was genuinely picked up on the battlefield in the sense of captured, carrying a gun, shooting against American or other coalition forces in Afghanistan or elsewhere. Most of them, and I think perhaps nearly all of them, are there because they were captured by bounty hunters. There was a $5,000 bounty for every alleged terrorist.
A lot of money in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Some of them were just, you know, the Northern Alliance was advancing across Afghanistan, picking people up and just handing them over to the Americans. And there are people there who were denounced in land disputes. There were people who, you know, were perhaps they'd occupied somebody else's land holding, or some family felt that they were unjustifiably squatting in a house or something, and the civil justice system had broken down. You couldn't go to court in Afghanistan under the Taliban regime and during the period when it broke down. So, well, just say they're a terrorist and they can go to Guantanamo Bay. What is very clear, is, as I make clear in my book, the screening process that they had back when most of the detainees arrived in Guantanamo in 2002 was absolutely diabolical. One of the interviewees in my book is a man called Lieutenant Colonel Tony Cristino, who spent most of 2002 and 2003 dealing directly with the intelligence that sent people to Guantanamo and then with the results of the interrogations that came out of Guantanamo. And what he says very emphatically in the book is that the way in which these people were dispatched there was without any kind of logic. Most of them didn't speak English. They had totally inadequate interpreters, most of them provided by private corporations who just didn't know how to recruit speakers of some of these more obscure, less well-spoken Asiatic languages such as Pushtun, Uzbek, Uyghur, and so forth. And you would, at the same time, working through these very inexperienced interpreters were very junior military intelligence officers, often with only 1 or 2 years service in the military, who had never dealt with this kind of thing before. And the thing was, they were terrified of making a mistake. You're dealing with a situation that's months after 9/11. Nobody wants to be responsible for letting a terrorist go, or a potential terrorist go. An allegation has been made by the Northern Alliance. They're our buddies. We believe that they're the good guys. We're going to trust what they say. This guy's a terrorist. You can't really understand what the interpreter's saying, and he can't understand what the detainee's saying. But do you take the risk? Do you write the report saying, I don't think this guy's a terrorist? No. You say, send him to Guantanamo, it might be safer. And I think a lot of people at Guantanamo, and I mean hundreds of people at Guantanamo, fall into that category. Well, the Pentagon won't have that. No, they were captured on the battlefield. They're terrorists, they're Al-Qaeda, they're Taliban. But you take the British detainees who you've mentioned. There were 9 British citizens in Guantanamo. And we were being told in the British media, spun from the Pentagon, that these guys were fantastically dangerous. Well, it's just nonsense. They all come back to the UK. They've lived quiet lives. 3 of them, of course, have made a film that is quite powerful about their experiences. But in no shape or form is there any evidence that they were involved in any kind of terrorism before they were consigned to Guantanamo, and they haven't been involved in it since. And one of them has made a rap record that...
Let me ask you a question. We've looked at all the negative aspects of this so far. Everything you and I have talked about has been the negative. Let's talk about the positive aspects of it for a while. This must be hugely effective, then, if they're putting out this much propaganda, or press control from the U.S. government. They must be getting a lot of really great information from the detainees there, then, that's helping us out in this so-called war on terror.
Well, that's certainly the picture that they were putting out in 2003.
Well, it must be. They wouldn't lie to us, would they?
Oh, of course it would be. It would be completely mislead the public.
No.
It would be impossible. I mean, the guy who really boosted Guantanamo as an intelligence gathering center was General Jeffrey Miller, who, of course, went on from Guantanamo to, as the phrase went, Gitmoize Abu Ghraib in Iraq. And he was an artillery officer. And when he went to Guantanamo at the beginning of 2003, the interrogators were very frustrated because they hadn't really got anything out of Guantanamo at all. Well, the reason they hadn't got anything was that the people there weren't involved in terrorism and they couldn't tell them anything. But Jeffrey Miller didn't accept this. He had been used to, you know, working out firepower and throwing big shells at targets and winning big results. And he thought that you could apply the same kind of principles to gathering intelligence and interrogation. So over a period of months, he sought permission from Donald Rumsfeld, from the Pentagon, to make the interrogation method much harsher. And, of course, we've seen some of the, it's now very well established, the kind of methods that we used, dogs, heat and cold, loud music, starvation, sexual taunting, women smearing detainees with fake menstrual blood, and all these kind of tactics that we used. And Miller was saying that he had achieved fabulous results. And I remember interviewing Miller towards the end of 2003, and he said to me that they had achieved a six-fold increase in the enormously valuable intelligence, as his phrase, gathered from Guantanamo Bay. Well, I cross-referenced that with a number of intelligence officials back in Washington. Some of them spoke to me only on condition of anonymity, and they were unanimous in agreement that this was just a wild exaggeration of the true value of Guantanamo intelligence. But Tony Cristino, the lieutenant colonel I've already mentioned, who was working at that point as one of the chief officers of a thing in the Pentagon called the Joint Intelligence Task Force Against Terrorism, which was processing all the live interrogation reports from Guantanamo and indeed elsewhere, he told me on the record that Guantanamo Bay intelligence had not helped prevent a single terrorist attack anywhere in the world. And the kind of claims that Miller and, through him, Donald Rumsfeld had made about intelligence from Guantanamo, that it had revealed terrorist financing structures, the way in which they crossed borders, plans to blow up apartments, planes, whatever you like, it was just nonsense. It wasn't the case. And he said there wasn't a single terrorist plot damaged or thwarted because of Guantanamo Bay. Look on the other side. What does Guantanamo stand for in the whole of the Islamic world? It stands for the oppression of the West and the United States. And as both Cristino and another very senior intelligence official told me then, for every guy in Guantanamo, you probably create 10, and perhaps even more than 10, maybe 100 terrorists, because people are so outraged at the sight of these people incarcerated year after year after year without any evidence ever being presented against them, without ever getting any kind of hearing. It actually convinces them that the kind of propaganda that the likes of Osama bin Laden have been putting out is actually justified.
Well, the trade-off, if the scales are heavily tilted one way, it's just hard to imagine. But then again, for this Bush administration to come along and say that they've erred, that they've made a mistake, that this wasn't a good thing and they're going to shut it down, it seems like that's something that's just impossible for them to do. I can't see them ever saying that it was any kind of a mistake at all. They never admit that. So the trade-off in this whole thing is we've lost big time on this then.
I'm afraid you're right. I mean, I don't think they will ever admit that it was a mistake. I mean, Bush has made a few comments in the last few weeks saying he would like to close Guantanamo Bay. But then he said, I'd like to put them on trial in the United States. He surely must know, or his advisors know, that that's just going to be impossible because the only evidence against nearly all the detainees in Guantanamo is the evidence that's come out of their own mouths through coercive, abusive, sometimes outright torture techniques in interrogation. No American court would entertain this evidence for 5 minutes. So how is he going to put any of these people on trial in America? It's an absolute impossibility. There are really only two choices. Keep it going with all the injustice that it entails, or send every single one of those people home. Now, we have, of course, this military commission process, which, again, the administration holds great store by. We don't know which way the Supreme Court's going to go in this Hamdan case due on Friday, but I become very acquainted with one of the 10 cases, 10 out of 460 detainees at the moment. Of course, over 750 prisoners have passed through Guantanamo, but just 10 people have been charged. And the case I'm very familiar with is a man called Binyam Mohammed, who is an Ethiopian who lived in the United Kingdom for about 10 years before he went to Guantanamo. He was a student. He was studying computer science in London. He worked in a Muslim community center, having just, in fact, recently converted to Islam. He was a very new convert. But he also had a problem. He had a drug problem. So he went to Pakistan to try to kick this drug habit in the spring of 2002. Well, he was arrested as he was leaving the country, and he was interrogated for several months in Afghanistan. And then he was the subject of one of these extraordinary renditions where he was flown by the CIA from Afghanistan to Morocco, a country with which he had absolutely no connection at all. And he was held in Morocco for well over a year at a place that's become quite notorious, known as Tamara, a secret torture facility near Rabat, the capital of Morocco. And outrageous things were done to him there. He had his body, including his genitals, cut with a scalpel. Not deep, big cuts, but just to terrify him, you know, beyond imagining. He was beaten. He was sexually assaulted with objects. I mean, he was abominably treated. And it seems quite clear that in some of these interrogations, a CIA officer was present. The reason we assume that it must be a CIA officer is that she it was a woman, claimed she was a Canadian, but quite clearly Canadians don't get involved in this kind of thing. Well, eventually his confession was made. He went to Guantanamo Bay, and he's been charged under one of his military commissions. But what's very interesting is what he's been charged with, what his confession says. His confession says that he was in Pakistan in March of 2002, 6 months after 9/11. He goes to a dinner party in Islamabad when the two most wanted men in the world at that time show up to have dinner. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the planner and architect of September the 11th, Ramzi bin al-Shib, one of the other key planners, the man who had helped found the Hamburg cell where the plot started, former roommate of Mohammed Atta, who flew the first plane into the World Trade Center, who would have actually been one of the pilots had he been able to get a U.S. visa, which he, in fact, had been unable to obtain. They sit down for dinner, and also present is Binyam Mohammed, the guy now in Guantanamo, and Jose Padilla, the U.S. citizen, who, of course, was soon arrested in Chicago and transferred to military custody, accused of planning to detonate a dirty bomb, a radioactive device in New York. Well, Binyam Mohammed is still facing this charge that, with Padilla, he was conspiring to blow up New York with a dirty bomb. In fact, the charge sheet at Guantanamo goes further. It says that he was going to go from Pakistan after this dinner. He was then going to fly to Central Asia. He was going to pick up some uranium and, get this, smuggle the uranium into the United States.
Oh.
Perhaps not the easiest thing to do.
No.
Especially when you really have no experience of this kind of thing. Anyway, he would have met up with Padilla in New York, and they would have blown up apartments using gas lines and built their dirty bomb. The charges of this type against Padilla were dropped months ago. The government realized that they just couldn't sustain this. They couldn't sustain it in federal court. They moved him into a military brig. They were trying to charge him as an enemy combatant in a military commission in America. That case was due to be heard by the Supreme Court. They, I think, realized that the Supreme Court was just not going to let him get away with it, so they transferred him back to federal custody. He's now facing much lesser charges of supporting terrorism, terrorist finance. And indeed, there was a big article in the Miami Herald last week that suggests that that charge is going to fall apart too. So the case against Padilla has gone. But poor Binyam Mohammed, he's there in Guantanamo, facing trial by military commission. The only evidence that his lawyers have seen against him is this confession produced under these unspeakable circumstances.
Incredible.
Of torture in Morocco.
Absolutely incredible. And you say there's only been 10, there have only been 10 people charged?
10 people have been charged, that's all.
Out of how many people that are there?
Well, there are 460 there now. At one stage, there were getting on for 700. Over 750 at one time have been held there. But about getting on for 300 have been released. So there are around 450 to 460.
Well, what's the holdup? If they're going to charge these people, if they're serious about this, what's the holdup?
Well, the truth is they're not going to ever, even if they get away with all this, they're not going to charge more than a tiny fraction of these people, because even under their twisted rules where the prosecution holds all the cards, they cannot build a case. Some of these people, they claim they can't send them home because they face harsh treatment in their own countries. Well,
I'd take my chances.
That's an excuse.
Yeah, I think I'd take my chances if I were there. I think I'd rather they gave me that choice if I could. Oh, that. So So really they're in a situation where they know they can't charge most of them because they can't win a case even with the deck stacked so heavily on their side. Or they can let them go and suffer the wrath of the press and the entire world finding out that most of these people were innocent in the first place. It seems like a no-win situation for the United
States. It's a complete no-win situation. I think Guantanamo was an experiment. I think it was a very ill-thought-out experiment. They wondered how far they could go. They thought, let's push the envelope of legality. I do believe there is an underlying agenda in a lot of the Bush administration's policies. I think some of the more ideological members of the administration, especially after September 11th, they're on the back foot now, they're retreating, but particularly then, they thought that this was a way of advancing the executive power of the presidency, of curbing the power of the Congress and the court, and also particularly of undermining international law. And they had this vision of a world which would be under an essentially benign American power, but led by the presidency, with the other parts of the Constitution far less important. And Guantanamo was like one of several test beds for this idea, I think. It represented the negation of international law and the tearing up of the Geneva Convention. It represented the tearing up of the U.S. Constitution. It represented a new departure in executive power over human beings.
Well, God knows they've certainly done everything they can on the domestic front to bring that to fruition as well.
Exactly.
And even continuing on, we're finding out this past week. Actually, we're not finding out. I think most of America knew they were messing with bank records. In fact, I'm going to talk about it later on the program. They admitted themselves about 3 years ago. So this deal of threatening the New York Times is really a joke. David, your book, Guantanamo, The War on Human Rights, it's available in paperback right now. Is it? How do they get it?
It's published by the New Press. It's certainly available online at Amazon and so forth, and I hope it's in bookstores.
Okay.
And it's in translation in a few countries around the world as well.
Very good. David, you've given us a great window into Guantanamo and what goes on there. And I really appreciate that. This is the most comprehensive talk we've had about Guantanamo, and I knew you were the guy to do it, and you did very nicely on informing our audience. I do appreciate your being on the program, and I wish you the very best with your book.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Rose. Interesting. Guantanamo, Gitmo. So, it is true. We had nothing to gain and everything to lose in Guantanamo. It was a no-win situation from the get-go. I think a lot of us realized that. We just had a man who has plenty of experience in investigating Gitmo tell us that. It is a no-win situation for the United States, yet another no-win situation that the Bush administration has put this great country in. How long will it take? How long will it take for us to erase the memory of this administration? I'm afraid it's going to take decades. I'm afraid the rest of the world is not going to forgive us for a very, very long time. That's what has me deeply troubled. And you can't be the big bully on the block and have peace and tranquility in your country because people are going to come after you. It's just like the old gunslinger days. The guy that was the top gunslinger, someone challenged him all the time. Sooner or later, the big gunslinger gets shot down. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen to this country someday if we allow it to remain in the clutches of people like George Bush and Dick Cheney. And I'm talking primarily Dick Cheney. You know that. Someone sent me an email today with an article to it. I'm trying to think George Lakos wrote it about how he didn't think Bush was incompetent. George, I disagree. I believe George Bush could not be more incompetent than he is. The rest of them, Cheney and those boys, they have been competent, just like his article said. They've been very competent at spreading radical extremist right-wingism here in this country. They've been very competent at that. But as far as running world affairs, they have been miserable failures. And I do believe that George Bush is in no way competent. I can't think of a way that George Bush is competent. He's a failed businessman. He's a failed leader. he's a failed man as I'm concerned, where I'm concerned, and he'll never, never be able to establish a legacy after his presidency is over where anybody will respect him whatsoever. Even Republicans that voted for him are shunning him now. That's the case. So, George, I do disagree with you on that. I'll respectfully disagree with you. I usually agree with George Blakos on most everything he writes. But I do not agree that George Bush himself is competent whatsoever. I can't see it. Left to his own devices, he wouldn't be able to run a, well, he wouldn't be able to run any kind of a business that I know of. Hey, we're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. Hope you'll stay with us till after the news. We've got a lot to talk about. You folks on the phone, just hang in there. We'll be with you after the news. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on a beautiful Tuesday.
This is Quality News Network. The U.S. military has announced the deaths of three more of its members in Iraq, a GI and a Marine, in separate attacks today near Baghdad, and another U.S. soldier yesterday in the Anbar province. And nearly 70 Iraqis have died in attacks throughout the country in the past 24 hours. Meanwhile, 450 detainees have been released from Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison under the Prime Minister's National Reconciliation Plan, which is designed to bring insurgents into the political process. And, in fact, one of Iraq's largest Sunni Arab groups has endorsed the plan. The cost of fighting the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan is going up. The Army says it'll need $12 billion next year to replace, repair, and upgrade equipment. That's triple what it's been spending each year since 2002. The second trial for Saddam Hussein is set to begin on August 21st, just as his first trial is ending. He's currently being tried for the deaths of Shiite Muslims. In August, he'll stand trial for the deaths of an estimated 100,000 Kurds. President Bush's latest approval ratings up a bit. The Washington Post ABC News poll shows 38% of those asked like the job he's doing. That's up from 33%. But 60% disapprove, and 64% say he still has no clear plan for what to do in Iraq. The Senate Judiciary Committee today is hearing arguments from the administration as to why it is not an abuse of executive power for the president to revise or disregard bills passed by Congress and signed into law. He's done so more than 700 times, citing national security as the reason. Chairman Arlen Specter says he wants to hear what research the administration has done to lead them to the conclusion that they can cherry-pick. An agreement announced today between rival Hamas and Fatah to implicitly recognize Israel. It's the first step in ending sanctions against the Hamas-led Palestinian government and the reopening of peace talks with Israel. But the agreement comes in the wake of growing tensions along the border, where Israeli tanks and troops have gathered for a threatened offensive against Palestinian militants if they do not free an Israeli soldier kidnapped on Sunday. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he's doing all he can to find him. The president of the Clinton, Missouri Elks Club was killed and nine other members injured when their century-old three-story Elks Lodge collapsed on them while they were holding a dinner meeting last night. 40 others managed to escape unharmed. The cause of the collapse is under investigation. The U.S. Surgeon General says secondhand smoke clearly kills people, and the only way to control it is to ban all smoking in workplaces. In Arizona, a 60,000-acre wildfire north of the Grand Canyon has marooned some workers and tourists, but officials say no one is in danger, and lightning has sparked six more wildfires in northern Nevada. This is Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to QualityNewsNetwork.com and click on 2006 Candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Five leading online service providers have announced that they will jointly build a database of child pornography images and develop other tools to help network operators and law enforcement better prevent distribution of child porn. The participating companies are AOL, Yahoo, Microsoft, Earthlink, and United Online, the company behind Net Zero and Juno. Univision Communications has agreed to sell the company to a consortium of investors for $12.3 billion in cash. General Motors and Delphi say that 47,000 of their workers have accepted buyouts or early retirement. Intel is selling its division that makes processors for handheld devices to chipmaker Marvel Technology Group for $600 million. MGM Mirage, the world's second-largest casino company, has unveiled a model of its $7 billion Las Vegas Project City Center, a mega-resort that will employ 7,000 construction workers and 12,000 permanent workers when it's finished. Late payments on credit card bills climbed in the first quarter of this year by 4.4%, largely due to increased gasoline prices and rising borrowing costs. And Citizens Banking Corporation says it is buying fellow Michigan bank Republic Bancorp for $1 billion in stock and cash, making it the 45th largest bank in the United States. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $72.05 this hour, up 25 cents a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrials are down 82. NASDAQ is down 21 points. And the S&P 500 is down by 7. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back. I hope you had a chance to listen to the news. Maybe go out to the fridge, get yourself a cold drink, and sit back and relax and enjoy the second hour of the program today. So glad to have all of you with us. Very thankful for our audience. We've got a great audience, and I do appreciate hearing from all of you. Well, especially all you folks on the Head On Radio Network chat room, and we've got some folks visiting today from over to the Tom Hartman chat room. So welcome to all you folks, over at Democratic Underground and Democrats.com and all the great websites that we're affiliated with. Glad to have all of you around. Some of the fights that break out on the chat rooms. Ooh, I'm not a big chat room guy. Never been into very many chat rooms, but I noticed earlier great big argument breaking out on chat room. That's interesting. I think sometimes it's a good thing people aren't face to face. There might be fisticuffs going on. I don't know. Welcome to the program. We've got much to talk about today. I found it. I found the interview with David Rose, author of Guantanamo: The War on Human Rights, to be a absolutely fascinating story. Absolutely fascinating. And is our self-respect as a nation ever going to return? These people have done untold, and when I say these people, I'm talking about the Cheney Bush administration. They've caused untold harm to the reputation of the United States, and I really do believe it's going to take, till far after I'm gone from this planet for them to repair it. It's beyond anything I imagined. As you all know, and I guess I know about most of you, we didn't want George Bush to be the president. But once he got in office, we thought, well, my God, how bad can it be? It's 100 times worse than I ever dreamed it could be. I thought, well, okay, we got this bozo. He'll be out of there in 4 years. We'll get somebody else. How much harm can he do in 4 years? Oh, man. Did I ever misunderestimate him? And give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, and let's go to the phones right now. Some of you folks waited for a while. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
It's your most committed caller from Northern California.
Hi, Dave.
Once again, I should tell you that I called in while you were talking to your guest, Dave, there, and again could hear only your side of the conversation. So if this,
on the phone?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So that's if you get an adjustment for the incoming, two people on the phone can't hear each other, but you, we can hear you.
Okay. Okay.
And the main point that I've been trying to make, because the way I connect these dots, you know, it is not like, will the administration admit that they made a mistake? No, they did not. They came up with a very ambitious plan, this global domination, this new world order thing. And it was going to be very profitable and very lucrative for this Halliburton Carlyle group, and it has been that. They have shifted most of the all of the treasury and a lot more into their pockets, and it's deliberate. They are staying there because it's remaining very profitable to them, and they're not the kind of people to be troubled by the harm that's being done as long as they're profiting as much as they plan to, their new world order. That's the way I'm seeing this. I wish I didn't, but I think we have our White House full of pure psychopaths right now.
Well, I can't disagree on that. I certainly do think it's full of psychopaths. They are. When you look at, you know, I saw that diagram. I like to call it the White House family tree the other day of all the appointments in the White House. I think it was on that Frontline program where they showed, you know, the diagram of power and starting with Bush and then down to Cheney. They should have had Cheney on top, but as it filtered down through, it was just Cheney people everywhere. The Feists and the Pearls and the Wolfowitzes, and it was just loaded with Dick Cheney people who you know what their agenda was. And here we've got Douglas Feith out there right now trying to stir up a war with Iran. He's absolutely livid that we're not going to war against Iran.
That was spelled out in their PNAC plan.
They're going
after their axis of evil.
Yeah, and you know, he's a very disappointed guy that we're not going after Iran right now. They want to shoot first and ask questions later. And I guess, you know, the part I don't understand, Dave, after looking at what has happened in Iraq, how could it possibly be that any sane person wouldn't want to solve whatever problem we have with Iran in a diplomatic way, if at all possible? How could any sane person want to go to war?
Well, you see, you're still groping for some noble intent in there, guy, and it isn't there. These guys have found this to be extremely profitable. They plan to be the first small clique of trillionaires in a country, in a world area, that is a massive extreme poverty, starvation, no benefits, no health care. That is the goal that they have in mind. They are some truly sick, sick people.
Well, I agree with that. I do. And yes, I do. Try and continue to look for something noble in there, but it's not to be. I need to give that up.
It isn't even a you know, they made a lot of dumb moves, but their goal of conquering Iraq and Afghanistan, that's right on target, and they should be in Iran and somewhere down the way Syria and Korea. But
I'm going to be interested to find out. It appears that they've backed off a little bit on Iran, and I'm going to. We're all going to watch it very carefully to see if the real rabble rousers within the group end up getting their way and getting us whipped into a frenzy over them again. I guess the question would be, Dave, and I don't know of anybody to ask it of any better than you, what type of an event will it take for us to get involved in a war with Iran? That's what I'm scared of.
And are they the kind of folks that would stage another one for us? And that's the answer, that yes, indeed they are. That, you know, if their goal is to invade Iran and the people won't support it and the world is warning us against it, they would have to create something that would say, now we have to do it. You know, our yet another Pearl Harbor has befallen us.
And well, if they actually haven't done it, and if they're actually not planning on it, you got to know they must be wishing for it. It's what certainly propelled them on their way in Iraq. One has to wonder if they ever would have. What would have precipitated the Bush occupation of Iraq had it not been for 9/11? They'd have found something.
It took several months to stage that day. It's just not something they could have pulled off in one day. You don't have the planned demolition happen, and it happened to all three buildings. Certainly there was no way you can say 7 was brought down by the impact of a plane. It was supposed to be hit by Flight 93. The passengers recovered Flight 93, and I think Dick had to have it shot down. He couldn't have afford to have it land with any of his Bandar Arabs being confronted by the press. So.
Well, you know, everybody that saw that Frontline show, it was a great program, but there were a lot of big unanswered questions in it, and I think the most visible one to people who don't believe in any kind of a conspiracy theory whatsoever, people that have shied away from that completely, the most visible, glaring, missing piece in that whole thing was, what did happen to Flight 93 over Pennsylvania? Was that plane shot down or not? You know, they mentioned that Cheney had given orders to do it if they needed to. And, you know, we have all the residents of that area claiming that they saw pieces going here and pieces going there. You know, I wonder if we'll ever know the truth of that. Thank goodness, for them, for the PNAC boys, if in fact that was something that they planned. It was in a remote enough area that there wasn't a bunch of press all over the place.
I don't think they were concerned about where it came down because it was going to come down in pieces. There was a lot of people grabbed their cell phones when that first got hijacked, and they were talking to people on the ground. All of this has now been impounded, and everybody that received a call has been sworn to secrecy, given $1 million, told that they would forfeit it if they spoke another word about that day. But before they did that, we heard some of the calls, and one lady talking to her husband, and we're going to try to take the plane back because we know we're going to get flown into the side of a building. A little while later, we've done it. We've recovered the plane. We have a pilot. We're going to be safe. Another fellow over on the other side, there's just been an explosion on the right wing. The engine is found directly below where that went, and then it's flying with a broken wing out of control and crashes in Pennsylvania. But it was supposed to hit Building 7. That was going to be the justification for why all three towers came down.
Well, you know, I meant on my last trip a couple of weeks ago, first time I've flown for a little while, I was going to see if I could use my cell phone in the air. I've never tried to do that.
It's against the rules, but you can do it. And if you think you're about to die, you will use it.
Yeah, I guess I would try that. I just often wondered. I think you can use it once they tell you, once you get up in the air, but I just never thought of it.
I'm a pilot. I've flown a lot of people that were talking on cell phones, and it's perfectly, and they work better up there. There's less obstruction up in the air than there is.
Okay, well.
There's the rules that say they didn't want you to use it because it might interfere with the navigational system. But
that's all bunk, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. But and they also have their phones that you pay to use on the plane.
That's so probably, $4 a minute or something like that.
Yeah, they prefer you to use theirs.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I never did. I never did try to use the cell phone in the plane. I guess I'm an old-fashioned guy. I guess once I'm up, I'm too busy looking out the window, seeing what's down below. Love to fly. Just absolutely love to fly. I think I should have been a pilot. I would have gladly just done it. It probably, like everything else, it gets boring. Probably. Day in, day out, taking off and landing and being in some bed other than your own. What do you think about all the phony outrage you saw yesterday from Bush and Cheney about the banking records fiasco coming out into the public? What do you think about that? Do you have an opinion on it? I do. First of all, I thought the phony outrage that Junior Bush exhibited was just absolutely laughable. Oh, he was really indignant, wasn't he? Oh, that New York Times, those dirty guys. And who did we see last night? We saw this crazy, lunatic Melanie Morgan. I'm afraid I don't know about Melanie Morgan. I don't know. She's a talk radio host, and she must be from New York or Washington or someplace on the East Coast. I never heard of her. Lunatic. An absolute crazy lunatic. And as I mentioned before, she and Michelle Malkin are trying to out-Coulter Ann Coulter. They're just not man enough to do it. man, this woman was raving last night. And, of course, Sharpton brought up the fact that, well, you know, what are you doing complaining about this? About them letting the New York Times, when your own, the people that you're 100% behind, let go, you know, the Valerie Plame name, put it out there. Oh, don't give me that. I'm not going to discuss that. Well, hell no, she's not going to discuss it. None of them will discuss it. It was just, I wish I knew. I wish I knew when I watched some crazy woman like that Melanie Morgan last night on Hardball. Does she mean it? Surely she couldn't mean it. I mean, if she does, she's half nuts. I mean, there's no other way around it. But here we have Junior Bush yesterday and Dick Cheney out feigning all this phony outrage why they've given away the secrets. You know, these people are traitors, the New York Times, why it's disgusting. You know, what disgraceful Bush called it, and Cheney a whole bunch of other things. Oh, they just, you know, tipped off the terrorists that we're using their bank data. Tipped them off. And now we won't be able to do this anymore, and we've lost a big weapon in our war on terror, a big weapon. And we had Representative Peter King on TV last night. Oh, they've got to be charged with treason. And that crazy woman, that Melanie Morgan, they've got to be put in prison. The editor of the New York Times got to be put in prison. Let me read you something that'll take a couple of minutes to read it. But just to show you how absolutely crazy these people are, and how bold they are, though, to think they can get away with saying anything. The Treasury Department's Undersecretary for Enforcement, Jimmy Garrule, being interviewed, he said, well, one example, the president stated, this is his statement in the Rose Garden today, Hamas receives money from the Holy Land Foundation with respect to schools. There are schools that are supported by the Holy Land Foundation, and these schools encourage children to engage in terrorist activities, specifically suicide and bombing activities. So that's one example. Another example is the money that is raised by the Holy Land Foundation is used to support the families of suicide bombers that engage in suicide terrorist attacks, an insurance policy, if you will, for the survivors of terrorist attacks by suicide bombers. Now, Margaret Warner asked this Jimmy Garrule, the Undersecretary of the Treasury. And by the way, Johnny O writes on the chat room, she does mean it. I've seen her before on a different show. She's a real asshole, talking about Melanie Morgan. So Margaret Warner asked this Treasury Department Undersecretary, now, are you able to track that? Are you actually able to track money from the Holy Land Foundation to Hamas? To actually these families, or are you saying the Holy Land Foundation, let's just take an example directly, supports these families? Jimmy Garrule says, we're able to track money from donors to bank accounts, from bank accounts to the Holy Land Foundation, back to the Holy Land Foundation to schools that support terrorist activity. We do this, pay attention to this, we do this through the use of the Bank Secrecy Act, the database that is administered by the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is an agency within the Treasury Department. We're able to do this through the Foreign Asset Tracking Center, which is an agency within the Treasury Department as well. There are several vehicles, several mechanisms that we use in order to track terrorist assets. This is an interview with the Undersecretary of the Treasury for Enforcement, Jimmy Garrule, from December 4th, 2001. 2001. Nearly 5 years ago, we had people from this administration on TV telling all about the mechanics of this program that we're using for this banking spying that we're doing right now, laid the whole thing bare out there for the whole world to see, and now George Bush and Dick Cheney and all the right-wing talking heads are after the New York Times? Do they think that their words go away and they're gone and we never hear them again and we never... What's wrong with these people? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong. They know they can get away with it, don't they? They know it. They don't expect some little guy James talk show to come up and put their words back in. It's criminal. I mean, it's criminal for them to get up there and feign all this outrage about this when they themselves gave this up 5 years ago. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, my name's Carolyn, and I'm a fairly new listener to you, and I appreciate your show. Thank you very much. And what I'm calling about is a friend of mine gave me an article that I just finished reading last night, sat up quite late reading it. Fascinating article in the June 15th Rolling Stone magazine by Robert Kennedy. Have you seen it yet?
Which one? About the...
Did Bush steal the 2004
yes.
election?
Got it sitting right here, as a matter of fact.
Amazing. Are you as amazed by it as I am?
Well, I guess we've had a long time for it to sink in.
Yeah, and well, one of the really troubling things about this is if an investigation isn't completed on this by November 2nd, I believe it is, they're going to go ahead and shred all the ballots, so any proof of any kind of wrongdoing will be gone. And, you know, like Robert Kennedy, I'm really incredulous that, you know, the public isn't. If this were Clinton and the Democrats, they'd be dipping them in egg and flour and fricasseeing them and sending them out on a flaming boat. And I just don't understand, you know, the Republicans just seem to be like pit bulls anymore, and the Democrats seem to be like poodles. And I'm just, as a citizen, I'm my fury level is at an all-time high, and I'm just really amazed that there isn't more done about these different things that we're talking about.
Well, I saw one of the interviews last night. I believe it was Joe... Oh, I can't think of his name. He's on MSNBC, Joe Scarborough. And he looked at the guest and says, you mean to tell me that if Bill Clinton was in office now and had initiated this banking thing where they can go spy on your bank record, that you wouldn't be going crazy? And, of course, they won't talk about it then.
Sure.
But you're absolutely right. The Republicans are acting like a bunch of rabid dogs, like this is all just monstrous things, you know, this attack
even
on the New York.
Asking questions about it.
Oh, absolutely. How dare
well,
you?
You know, when I'm on online and I read other individuals' comments on some of these petitions that are going around, and now I received a petition yesterday that states that the Congress are going to try to keep us, they're passing some new darn thing, that they're going to try to keep us from registering our opinions with non-profit organizations such as MoveOn.org so we can register as a group as opposed to going into their websites as individual citizens. So, you know, it's like the American public is narcotized or we're in some sort of weird McCarthy or Dark Valley sort of era, and when are people going to take to the streets and just demand their rights back? I'll be out there, you know, where is everybody? I'm just unbelieving.
Oh, it is, you're so right. You know, I think back, I'm old enough, and I think back to the Vietnam War. I think of all the protests that
the
were going
activities.
On.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then again...
Are people just absorbed with McMansions and comfort nowadays? And
no.
We're going to sit by and just watch everything just slowly?
I don't think that's it. I don't think that's it. I don't think it's affecting everybody. The Vietnam War, you could get your butt drafted into the Army,
mm-hmm,
and you could
mm-hmm.
get sent over. You don't anymore, and so somebody else's kid's going to get killed instead of yours.
Yeah.
Somebody else's kid is going to sacrifice their lives for a few barrels of oil. And so, you know, I'm sitting over here fat and happy in the United States, and I guess I'm just not all that upset because it doesn't bother my family. That's the attitude.
Well, and it's just awful, you know.
It is.
It's awful. It's hard not to be cynical because, you know, I said for a long time that people aren't going to change their driving habits until the gas goes up, the fuel goes up high enough that it's going to affect them personally. And that's exactly what's happening. And that's a sad state of affairs for Americans. You know, are we just so anesthetized by television and other things that we've allowed to take over our lives, mortgages and all these different things that we've allowed to take over our lives that we no longer, you know, I mean, people die for what we're giving away.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned on the program yesterday, I'm one of these people that just hates all this showbiz stuff. I really do. And I mentioned a little article yesterday about how they caught some photographer out in L.A. someplace hiding in the bushes outside of a school of where this Angelina Jolie and her boyfriend or whatever, where one of their kids goes to school. And I'm thinking, my God,
that's
big news. And so he sells it to one of these tabloids, and people go out and buy it. Oh, boy, I can't wait to read. What's wrong with the people? I mean, that, why wouldn't anybody want to know that? But 11 guys get killed in Iraq, and, well, you know, so what?
Yeah, it's a strange state of affairs. I feel like we're in some sort of weird Republican fairy tale that it's as if we've all breathed some sort of ether. And not all of us. I think there's a very vibrant, loud-spoken, huge stripe of people out there, but somehow our voices. What's happened to the investigative reporters, for God's sake? We used to have really acute investigative reporters. Why isn't somebody looking into this Ohio fiasco and Kenneth Blackwell and all his horrible doings? Why isn't somebody roasting and toasting these people and taking them to account for all these things that they're doing? And the corruption in Washington is just incredible. If Mark Twain were alive today, he'd be sharpening his pen like, oh, my God, you know, it's just awful.
You bet he would. You bet he would. I was going to talk about that Ohio situation in a little while. I tell you, that's one of the ugliest political situations I've ever seen. Now they've charged four more women, former mayor of Toledo.
Do people realize out there, are people actually picking up things and reading them? Folks out there, it's the June 15th Rolling Stone, and the article is called, Did Bush Steal the 2004 Election? How many people will go to their graves like me and never believe that we had an honest election in 2000 or 2004? Ever.
I know.
You couldn't convince me that you couldn't put a statistician in front of me and convince me that they were honest elections. I'm simply amazed by what's going on, and we're allowing it. We're just allowing it. And I talk with so many people nowadays, and they say, God, this is similar to Nazi Germany. Well, wake up.
Yeah, that's
if
right.
If it is, then do something.
Time to wake up.
Do something.
Hey, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
And don't let go of your outrage. Don't let go of it.
Not hardly. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good call. Good call. It's so true. And I can't, well, hey, I better pause for a break. That's what I better do right now. I better pause for a quick break. And how many of you heard this yesterday before I go to break? You're talking about this, the Senate hearings. We haven't really covered that today. The Senate hearings that got going on, the Democrats, about the lying us into war. I would like to know how anybody as a Republican could sit and watch those hearings that took place yesterday with at least four out of the five that I know of, the panelists being interviewed, were all Republicans. And none of them admitted to being a Democrat, but most of them. And Wilkerson, you know, former Undersecretary of State, talking about the whole situation, about how they cooked the intelligence and passed on this phony document to Colin Powell, how they vetted the thing and how they built it brick by brick by brick out of paper bricks. The whole sordid story goes out there yesterday. And, you know, if you're a Republican, you had to look at that thing and go, my God, there's the people in my party that did this. I won't put up with that. I swear to you, if that was Bill Clinton, if it was Jimmy Carter, if it was Jack Kennedy, no matter who it was, a Democratic president that did that, I would be calling for him to be impeached today. I mean that, I would. Politics doesn't have anything to do with it. When you'll send your country into a war for the reasons they sent us into this one, politics has nothing to do with it. But they asked Wilkerson yesterday how this could happen. Listen to what he said.
What I am just, and I think the American people, quite frankly, am so perplexed with is how, and I think...
This is Representative
Wilkerson,
Walter Jones, Republican.
When I was driving in earlier on the radio.
Asking this question.
And since I'm a Republican, I will go to you first. How did the four or five... the neoconservatives that were put into policy positions in and around the Department of Defense, how were they able to take credible, or at least the best information that could be given, And somewhat, it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like they rewrote the intelligence. And I guess my point is, because you were there with Secretary Powell, I'm sure at some inner meetings, so to speak, or classified meetings at the time, I don't know how, unless somebody wanted them to have that authority, that they themselves could have so much influence, and knowing that the previous history of these individuals was that they tried to get President Clinton to go into Iraq.
Remember, this is
my
a Republican.
My question is this to all four, if you would like to answer. Maybe it's a very simple question. I apologize if it's been asked before. But what perplexes me is how in the world could professionals, not, I'm not criticizing anybody here at this table, but how could the professionals see what was happening and nobody speak out? I'm not saying you did not do your duty, please understand, but my point is, as a congressman who trusted what I was being told, I'm not on the Intelligence Committee, Senator Dorgan, but I am on the Armed Services Committee, and I was being told this information, and I wish I'd had the wisdom then that I might have now. I would have known what to ask. But I think many of my colleagues that did not have the experience on the Intelligence Committee, we just pretty much accepted. So where along the way, how did these people so early on get so much power that they had more influence in those in the administration to make decisions than you, the professionals?
Let me try to answer you first, but let me say right off the bat, I'm glad to see you here.
Thank you, sir.
As a Republican, I'm somewhat embarrassed by the fact that you're the only member of my party here.
I agree.
But I understand it. I'd answer you with two words. Let me put the article in there and make it three. The vice president.
Damn him. The vice president. There you have it. There you have the one biggest indictment of a man that you could have in this administration. We've had all these Republicans for all these years now, after this Iraq war has started, after this illegal Bush occupation has started. We've had all these Republicans going on and on. Well, you voted for it. You voted for it. You had the same information we had. Yeah. They all had the same information. It was a bunch of goddamn lies. That makes me sick when I hear that. One lie after another, and these people have the temerity to go on these talk shows and say, oh, the Democrats said Bush lied. He didn't lie. The intelligence was bad. Intelligence bad my ass. Sure, some of the intelligence was bad, but it's obvious from these hearings that are going on, and that was a Republican, one Republican that had the guts to go in front of this panel and ask an honest question of another Republican. One. It was cooked. It was cooked from start to finish. We all know that. And yet there are people that defend it. People that are so hungry for oil and the blood of people over in the Mideast that they think this is all right, and it's not all right. This is the most egregious crime against the United States of America that's ever been perpetrated by anybody. I heard one of the talk shows the other night when they had that British fellow on there that was in Guantanamo that they let go. He said, surely, she interviewed the young man and said, surely you're not saying that George Bush is more of a terrorist than bin Laden. You stop and think about it. You stop and take a close look at the whole thing. Bin Laden's airplanes killed close to 3,000 people. How many soldiers have we lost in Iraq? How many soldiers have we lost on this wild goose chase, on this mistaken effort? How many, and how many more, and how many hundreds of billions of dollars bankrupting this country? And yet there's one Republican that shows up at these hearings to ask an honest question? But the answer he's got, the answer he got from Wilkerson is the answer to it all, my friends. It's the answer to it all. This war was cooked up by the PNAC group, and it's because of the fact that George Bush allowed Dick Cheney to pick himself as his own vice president and allowed Dick Cheney to infiltrate all of his people into the Bush administration, which cooked up these books, cooked up these this intelligence, and made this war. If I were a Republican today, if I had been a Republican yesterday and heard this panel of mostly Republicans that knew what happened on the lead up to this war, they knew, they were there, they saw what was happening. If I was a Republican and knew all this, I would hang my head in shame and swear an oath to never vote for another Republican the rest of my life. You tell me how you can watch what went on in that hearing room yesterday and still defend this man and still defend any of them and still defend the fact that we're in Iraq. You tell me how you could watch that if you've got any kind of a conscience whatsoever. If you love this country, if you support our military, you could not watch that and not be ashamed. You could not. I'm so disgusted by that when I saw that yesterday. I got to take a break.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first. Watching the valley, who's in charge of it all? God bless the army, and God bless our liberty. That comes the rest of it all. Hell, man, in position of backing away. Freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq. Back on the track, and let's rebuild America first. Once more. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Tim Robbins. Recently in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans in high levels of government, the military, and intelligence have risked their careers, their livelihoods, and in some cases their safety to bring information to light to expose the lies, duplicity, and potential crimes of the Bush administration. These patriotic Americans are trying to tell us something. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an official investigation into the Bush administration.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
And we're back for the last segment of the Guy James Show. Welcome. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. Yes, I do get angry now and then, and I do get angry when I think about what these bastards have done to the country I love and the country you love. It is criminal. They're talking about criminal charges against the New York Times. The criminal charges should have been filed a long time ago. A long time ago. I still say if the Democrats take over the House and the Senate this fall and they don't look seriously into filing articles of impeachment against Bush and Dick Cheney, that they've got no spine. Live and let live. Forget. Let's get it over with. Let everything, let the country heal. No. No, absolutely not. And I'm not that kind of a person normally. But these people have done irreparable harm to the United States, and they must pay for it. For if they don't, there's more just like them coming up the pipeline. When they get their chance to take over power in this country, they'll do the same thing. Only more. Only worse. Only more egregious than the crimes these people have committed. And it's not a pleasant thing to sit here and talk about the president and the vice president of the United States committing crimes. It's not a pleasant thing. It's a shameful thing. It's a shameful thing to have to do, to talk about our own government this way. We've disagreed with politicians over the years, one time after another. Sometimes they were right, sometimes we were wrong. That's the how it goes. That's the compromise. That's the spirit of real politics that takes place in Washington. But when you've got a gang that takes over like this group that's in there right now, when these people were hell-bent upon money grubbing for oil and imperialistic reasons in the Middle East, they need to be impeached. And if the Democrats don't have the stomach for it, then they shouldn't be our representatives. You know, our country, right or wrong, when she's right, she's right, and when she's wrong, she needs to be made right again, and there's nobody trying to make her right again, very few. I admired these senators on this panel yesterday for asking honest and open questions. And my God, do I ever admire Representative Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina, for being the only Republican, with balls enough to come over to that committee and ask an honest, open question when the rest of them are sitting in their office knowing that everything he said was absolutely correct. I want to puke every time I hear one of them say, "Well, John Kerry had the same information we all had." I think you found out just the last couple of days, if you didn't already know, if you weren't smart enough to already know, I think you had the exclamation point and period put on it yesterday that the information that took us to war was phony. And not only was it some bad intelligence, it was ginned up, trumped up, and played with and molded and shaped until they got it to where they wanted it. They didn't want to hear any of the intelligence that said, no, we shouldn't do this. They didn't want to hear that. Cheney making 11 or 12 trips to the CIA, massaging the attention. Did you hear, who was it, Wilkerson or Pillar? Which one? said they didn't even know that they had that special office from the White House in the CIA. What was it? Special Planning Office of Special Planning. I think that's what they called it. So many acronyms in that town. But it had been installed in the CIA, in the inner sanctum of the CIA, unbeknownst to most everybody there, so that they could be right on the scene and help produce the kind of intelligence that they wanted, the kind of intelligence they needed in order to go in front of the American public and say, hey, folks, we have to go to war. This is serious. They not only fooled almost the entire Congress of the United States, they fooled the American people. And the shameful part of it is, many American citizens are still to this day, suffering from the lies and misconceptions, thinking that they're truth, that they got from their leader. Don't know when I've been more disappointed in the people of the United States of America as I am right now. The things we are seeing going on, the things we are seeing happening to our government, bit by bit, we're watching them take our freedoms away. Little by little, we're the frog in the pot of boiling water, and you all know that story. Finally, the water's too hot, and the frog can't get out, and there's nothing you can do about it. And folks, we're headed in that direction. You're the frogs. I'm the frog. The whole of the American populace is representative of that frog being slowly cooked, slowly strangled, slowly taking their freedoms away from us to put those freedoms and the power in the hands of a few corporate masters and governmental masters. And I think you know what they call that. I think you know what it is. And it's exactly what's being practiced in the United States government under this Bush administration. And God, I hate to say that. I hate to say that. And I don't say that for any political reasons. I say it because it's true. It's so painfully obvious. It's right in front of everybody's face. It's so painful to watch it happen. The White House... The Washington Post today had another story in the White House, about the hearings yesterday, about how the White House ignored the warnings of dangers in Iraq. Didn't want to hear of it. Didn't want to hear what would happen after we went in there. They were warned about an insurgency, what would happen after we went in there. But all no. They didn't care about any insurgency. They didn't give a damn about what happened to any American soldiers after we got in there. They did not care. They did not care. They do not care, and it's a serious charge to make. George Bush and Dick Cheney and his people that are still out there going rah-rah for this war, those people do not care one bit for the lives of any American soldier lost or still living in the conflict over there. They don't care. There's no way they could ever convince me that they care. If they had cared, they wouldn't have done this in the first place. They have sacrificed the blood of our young men and women for their profit and their power. That's an unforgivable thing to do. And I hope they all rot in hell for doing it. That's what they deserve. And that may be judgmental. That may not be my judgment. It's not my call to make. But if you do believe in a higher power, you've got to believe that someday these people need to be judged for the horrible crimes they've committed against humanity and this country. And if that sounds extreme, then so be it. But it is what I believe. It's what I honestly feel. And after watching all the things we've watched lately about this panel with the Senate and the things we found out about Valerie Plame and the yellow cake uranium and all, the conclusions are inescapable. Absolutely inescapable. If you have any power of reasoning and logic whatsoever, you can see what's happened here. Which is really what drives me absolutely crazy about that 30-some percent that still stick with George Bush. How can it be that 30-some percent of the people of the United States of America are that stupid or ignorant or both? How can that be? That really shakes my faith in this country, that we have that many people that are that ignorant or that stupid or both. I don't know. I did want to talk a little bit about Ohio today. I see that four Toledo women, including two elected officials, are expected to be charged tomorrow with violating state ethic laws for their roles in Tom Noe's scheme. Tom Noe's little web is getting to be just about as big as Jack Abramoff's, only on a smaller scale. Lucas County Commissioner, I know some of these people. Lucas County Commissioner Maggie Thurber, Toledo City Councilman Betty Schultz, former Toledo Mayor Donna Owens, and former State Representative Sally Pertz are expected to be charged with first-degree misdemeanors for failing to disclose gifts from Noe. Here's what happened. They had a big fundraiser for Junior Bush, and I believe it was a $2,000 plate fundraiser, and of course these girls didn't want to spring for $2,000 apiece, so Noe hands them the cash, and they buy their tickets, and they go. The only thing is, that's not legal. Sit there and say, oh, guy, they all do it. Fine. If they do, they all deserve the same fate that's going to befall Noe shortly. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. A crook's a crook. Man, I would think, and Ken Blackwell running for the governorship of Ohio, you Buckeyes, and I know there are a lot of you there. You really, some of you can't be serious about Ken Blackwell, can you? I mean, I see that he's down in the polls. Thank God he's down in the polls. But I will tell you this right now, Dave and all of our friends and Brad Friedman and all of our friends that are deep, deep, deep into the black box voting issue, I will tell you right now that if Ken Blackwell comes up a winner over Ted Strickland in Ohio for the governorship, you better go seal off all the election boards in that place and investigate it pretty heavily. Because there's no way. There's no way. There is no way thinking people that would elect this Ken Blackwell as the governor of Ohio. It's laughable. It's just laughable. I have kind of a personal stake in that. And believe me, I know it's laughable that Ken Blackwell could be considered for the governorship of Ohio by anybody, by his mother. You don't know how ridiculous it is that people... Enough. I see Osama bin Laden got a story that must have made him laugh a lot today when he heard it. Shut down one of the ports out in California. Seems somebody had written a note with some chalk or something on a metal pillar in the hold of a ship, the mild Lotus, that read, "Nitro plus glycerin, a gift for G.W. Bush and his Jewish gang." And for that, they shut down the entire port and just went crazy. That's what happened. But every time Osama bin Laden sees something like that, he's got to grin from ear to ear and say, you know, this has worked so well. This has worked so well. We went over there and we brought down the Twin Towers and we killed all those Americans. And don't you know that fool Bush fell for it? He fell for it. And now at any time, he's got the Americans worked into a frenzy. And anytime anybody writes a note on a support beam of a ship, it's like, ooh, look out. And of course we have the the Miami 7. Don't want to forget them. I think by now you all know how serious that situation was, the Miami 7, with their Al-Qaeda connection and the FBI having to float them alone to buy boots and whatever, their little fatigues that they run around in, their camos and all that. They had to float them the money to do it. Yeah, this was a serious group, all right. But we got George Bush and the FBI. But see, we're protecting you folks. Oh, yes, this war on terror, we're doing so well. And so that's why you should let us go ahead and look into your banking records. See, we got that Miami 7, and we're catching all these other terrorists. That's why you folks shouldn't mind when we just want to take a little tiny look into your bank records. Don't you worry about it. And your phone calls and all that, don't you worry about it. Don't worry about it, because we're protecting you. We caught that evil bunch over in Miami. See, that alone right there is worth it. Oh, yeah. Ah, boy. They've thwarted all sorts of terrorist plots to hear them tell it. Haven't heard any of them proven yet, or haven't heard any of them amount to a tinker's dam. Especially this latest one. Absolutely incredible that the American people can be manipulated, massaged, whatever you want to call it, in this fashion. It really is. Hey, I want to thank you for being on the program today, for calling in, those of you that called. We enjoyed being here with you, as always. Probably a little uptight today over a few things Bush said yesterday, and Cheney, I'll get over it. Well, no, I won't. But I will be back tomorrow, and I hope you are too. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. You can bet on that, baby.